Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to our Action Research Podcast, created by the HEAR Lab team at the University of Houston. The HEAR Lab is the hub for engaged action research, and the mission of the lab is to build the capacity of scholars to create and disseminate collaborative, accessible, anti-racist research that centers community and fuels social change. Through hosting different activities such as walk and learns, webinars, or disseminating one-page research briefs, the team hopes to amplify research beyond articles and connect scholars to one another. Research should be done to create an impact, and by hosting this podcast, the hope is to have more awareness around anti-racist research approaches, as well as seeing how research goes beyond articles to connect to practice and policy. Today, we welcome Dr. Chinyere Egege, who is a licensed clinical social worker and council-approved supervisor in the state of Texas. As a researcher, she uses qualitative research methods to examine, advocate for, and inform best practices around the perinatal mental health care of Black women. Dr. Egege received her Bachelor of Art in International Development Studies from Calvin University in 2007. She earned a Master of Social Justice and Community Development from Loyola University, Chicago, in May of 2012, and then completed her Master of Social Work with a clinical concentration from the University of Houston Graduate College of Social Work in May of 2015. Just recently, in May of 2023, Dr. Egege also earned her PhD in Social Work from the University of Houston Graduate College of Social Work. Without further ado, Dr. Egege, let's have you briefly share with listeners what your dissertation was about and what inspired it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. So I've always been intrigued by pregnancy and how the body transforms to sustain and bring forth life. And I actually thought I was going to be an OBGYN until organic chemistry took me out. So
definitely a hard topic there.
Yeah. So when I found the world of perinatal mental health as a social worker, I just got excited at being able to reconnect with my love for birthing people, especially Black women. And so the personal connection kind of, you know, happened once I started having my own perinatal experiences with pregnancy and postpartum, and people my age, my friends, my siblings, you know, family members were starting to have their own experiences. And I started recognizing that there are a lot of things that we don't talk about that happen during pregnancy and postpartum. And then specifically in the last several years, as there's been a lot of discussion around infant mortality, morbidity, maternal mortality and morbidity in the United States, I started recognizing that there was a vacuum. Right. There were these people who were caught between not dying because they did not, you know, experience maternal mortality. They survived, but their pregnancies or their infants did not. And we weren't talking about the people who were caught in the middle, these invisible survivors. And so that's what piqued my interest. And that's what led me to my research topic in perinatal loss.
Okay. And could you give a quick definition of perinatal just for our listeners?
Certainly. So perinatal is the term that encompasses the pregnancy period and the postpartum period. So instead of saying pregnancy and postpartum, we use the term perinatal to encompass pregnancy through postpartum.
Awesome. Thank you. So let's hear more in terms of your dissertation and what you were looking at.
Yeah. So, specifically, I wanted to understand the experiences of Black women who had had some form of perinatal loss, right? So it really was an exploratory study because there really wasn't a lot in the literature. Like, we knew it was happening. We knew that from the studies and from all the statistics that Black women specifically were experiencing more morbidities and mortalities than other racial groups, other ethnic groups, but we didn't know what that meant to them, what that meant for them. We didn't know from their own experiences, from their own voices, what they felt was the contributor, you know, or what they felt the solution should be. And so that's where I really wanted to bring more into the literature. I wanted to be able to integrate their experiences and their voices into the literature because it really wasn't there. So that's what I did.
And when you say it wasn't there in the literature, are we talking 10, 20 studies, hundreds of studies? What are we talking about?
Well, so I was able to do a pilot in my qualitative research class in my third year. And so part of that was doing a literature review. And in combing through the literature on perinatal loss, I was finding that, yes, we know that perinatal loss is happening, but we also do not find a significant amount of information about perinatal loss when we're looking at infant mortality, morbidity, maternal mortality, morbidity. We weren't seeing a significant amount of information about perinatal loss. And with perinatal loss, we're talking about miscarriages, we're talking about stillbirths, and we're also talking about infant mortality. And when we know that miscarriages happen in average 1 out of 4 pregnancies, that's a significant
25%.
That is a significant amount, right? So if 1 out of every 4 pregnancies potentially ends in a miscarriage, but in the literature, we're not seeing it in that same, you know, represented in that same way, then that means that we're not hearing enough. And then very little was being said specifically about the Black experience. We were seeing the Black experience being represented in comparison to the white experience, but uniquely and exclusively centering the voices of Black women, it was barely there.
Okay. And as you talk about your dissertation, how did you intentionally use an anti-racist or social justice lens as you're setting it all up?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So for me, personally identifying as a Black woman, I already knew that coming into this, I wanted to make sure that my voice and the voices of people who looked like me were front and center. And so other studies that I had seen, like I said, were looking at the experiences of Black people compared to the experiences of other people. But I chose not to do that. I wanted to center Black women's voices exclusively. And so in the way that I set up my study, I was not looking at anyone who did not identify as a Black woman. And that was my own way of saying, we have done so much study on this topic, but looking at the Black experience as, you know, a contrast, right, to the white dominant experience. And my own anti-racist approach was to say, no, like the voices of Black people are going to be the focus of this study. I wanted women to freely share what it is that they're experiencing and to be able to say that the Black experience is not a monolith, right? Because many times when we're seeing these contrasts between white and Black experiences, it almost presents the Black experience as, well, this is what all Black people experience, right? And that is not true, right? And so being able to completely focus on the experiences of Black women meant that I was able to hear and share the distinct differences that exist for Black women in this experience.
Okay. So I think what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's centering that voice.
Yes.
Instead of this comparison of, let's put you compared to another group.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think this is the exciting part that so many listeners love hearing about. What did you find from your research?
So a lot of it was not exclusively new, because we have been hearing in more recent times, especially with social media, a lot of Black women coming out and telling us that they don't feel like they are listened to or they are heard when they are in the hospitals, right? So we heard that with experiences from people like Serena Williams or Beyonce. So there have been all these, you know, prominent figures who have come out, all these celebrities who have come out and said, when I was going through my own pregnancy or when I was having my labor and delivery, I was communicating these things. I was saying that I felt this way or I needed this. And those concerns were dismissed. And so that echoed throughout what I found. Additional things that came out were that a lot of women struggled with being able to speak openly about their loss, right? Because in the Black community, many times spirituality is used as a panacea, right? Like, okay, you know, God will take care of that. You know, God will give you another child, right? So a lot of these ways that spirituality is used as a coping mechanism, for some Black women, they were not interested in that. They wanted to be able to express their loss and their grief without feeling like they were somehow betraying their culture or their spirituality. And so that was another really interesting piece that came out that we typically don't hear, because most of the literature affirms spirituality as a coping tool for Black women. But that was something that was important that came out, that for some, they didn't want it to be. They wanted this space to be able to not, you know, choose between having faith in God and still being mad that they lost their pregnancy.
Absolutely. And I think as you talk about that, as a male that isn't birthing children, that this topic is so important because, as you said, 1 in 4 people are impacted by this. And then we look deeper into the statistics and who is being impacted. And instead of that comparison, you also talk about celebrities that have also experienced similar challenges. And how do we not just say, okay, this is what every individual's experience is like, but hear those stories, make sure that we are listening, making sure that we ensure that they are heard. So that's what I'm hearing from your study and how your approach was to this study. And go ahead.
I was just going to add that, yes, all of that. And I think another thing that I sincerely appreciated about just giving women an open space to share. So the approach that I used really kind of gave them that openness. So I used grounded theory as a methodology. And so with grounded theory, I did not go in with an agenda, you know, so there wasn't something that I was trying to say, aha, this is what I, you know, this is what everybody's been saying, and now you're affirming it. I really was just going in and saying, tell me what your experience has been like. Tell me what that has looked like in the hospitals. Tell me how you have coped. Tell me how you feel like your identity as a Black person and as a woman has impacted this experience. And so in giving women that openness to share, they were talking about faith. They were talking about culture. They were talking about family. They were talking about their employment status. They were talking about stigma. So there were so many themes that came out because they were not being put in a box and limited in their responses. So that was something that I really, really was thankful for, having faculty mentors and my chair and other members of my committee who were so affirming of my decision to use a constructivist grounded theory approach and really coaching me and helping me make sure that I was staying true to ensuring that women had, or the responders had the openness to share as openly about their experiences so that I could get as rich data as possible.
And as you combed through those themes, I think it'd be also great for our listeners to hear how your results that you found were then disseminated to the community that it impacts.
Yes. So just recently graduated. And so there's still a lot that I am going back and kind of listening again and really trying to extract from the data, because I averaged about 60 to 90 minutes with my interviews. And I had 12 responders. And so with that much, with all of that data, some of it was shared during my defense, and some of it is going to be shared in some upcoming brown bags and some upcoming conferences. But my desire is to be able to write some policy briefs and to be able to use platforms like these to share that information, because that was something that also came out for me in the process of having the interviews with the participants, that for a lot of women, they didn't feel like their stories were being heard, right? Mm. They didn't feel like what they had to share mattered because nothing was changing. And many times because they weren't hearing other stories like theirs. And so for a lot of them, they felt like they were the only ones who were having the struggles that they were having with their loss experience. And so as I continue to comb through the data, as I continue to figure out what the next steps are for this study, my priority is to make sure that I am sharing this information in spaces where women who have had these experiences can hear themselves and hear their stories. And then not just academics and researchers, but providers, because that was another key population that impacts, they're another key population that impacts this issue. And so for them to be able to hear, okay, these are what women, you know, who are going through this are saying about their interaction with providers. This is what they're saying they need in the hospital rooms. This is what they're saying they need in the postpartum period. And then even families, right? What they need from their support system, from their partners, from their extended family, from their churches, from their clergy. So all of that, you know, so there's so much room to disseminate this information beyond academia. And that's what I'm really excited about, because what the women were sharing was less for us academics and really more for the community.
And you talk about those different groups, whether it's clergy, whether it's their partners, whether it's the providers. There's so many different groups, and I would really love for there to be any action steps. Maybe you can briefly share action steps that people can take after hearing about your dissertation, whether it's policy, I know you just mentioned that, or social justice or clinical implementation. What are those action steps?
First of all, I think an important piece of all of this is recognizing how common this experience is. And so
one in four, and that's staggering.
Yeah. So, and that's with miscarriages. With stillbirths, it's not as common, but it still happens. And so I think sometimes as a society, when we think about pregnancy, we only think about pregnancies that end in a live birth, where the baby right. lives and is happy and healthy and mom is happy yeah. and healthy. But we know that that is not always the case. And so
we try to hide that.
We try to hide that, right? And so there's room for society to really start embracing the wide spectrum of experiences that women and birthing people have in the perinatal period, that there are women and birthing people who may not take a traditional route to having pregnancies, right? And if they do, that it may not end in a live birth, right? And that does not diminish the pregnancy experience. It just looks different. And as a society, how do we do better by these people? By talking about it, by normalizing it, by helping them not feel so isolated in their unique experiences, right? So I think just having these conversations more and normalizing the fact that this happens, and it's not that they did something or that they somehow are defective, but that this is just a part of the perinatal experience, even though we know that there's room for it to improve, that in the beginning, let's just start having these conversations.
Open conversations.
Exactly.
To be heard and not let me just react or respond.
Exactly. Right. So I think that's a very important first step. And that's something all of us can do. Right. You don't have to be a policymaker to have these conversations. Right. Many of us know people who are thinking about starting families or who are expecting. And so to just be present to whatever their experience is and not to hide if the experience does not end in a live birth. Right. So I think that's a really important first step. And then subsequently, just being better about championing the courage for those who choose to speak up, because not everyone wants to share their stories openly. But when they do, let's be champions for that. Let's encourage that. Let's make sure that they feel supported and heard and not shunned or dismissed, right? And I think that's where a lot of the action steps, right? As policymakers, as clergy, as providers, when we hear these stories, what are we doing about it, right? Let's not just say, okay, well, that was a great talk. That was a great presentation. I'm really sorry you went through that. It's like, okay, How can we do different? How can we make sure that the next person who has an experience like yours is better supported, that the church is able to come by and stand by them, or that, you know, our hospital is able to respond better, right? So everything from, you know, asking people who go through this experience, what would you have wanted to be different? Because the truth is, there will be another person who will need those answers.
And it's almost as if it's taboo, or there's stigma in having those conversations. And I really appreciate you talking about being a champion for those other voices. And that's why this has been so special to hear about your process and your research throughout our conversation today. And we really do hope to follow your journey as you continue disseminating and sharing this great research with the community, because you're not only just examining what's going on, but you're advocating. You're saying, hey, there's ways that each and every single person can make an impact. You don't have to be a provider. You don't have to be a professional in this realm. It could be each and every single person.
Exactly.
And then from there, it goes to informing the best practices. How can we ensure that these individuals are heard and listened to, whether it's from the clergy, whether it's from the hospital, whether it's from different caretakers or partners? How can we best inform what happens around the perinatal mental health care for Black women? So thank you so much.
No, thank you. Again, like I said, you know, people are more likely to learn about these things by listening to a podcast than reading a scientific journal, you know. So the information goes a lot farther through forums like this.
The Here Lab team is here to connect with scholars and community to amplify voices in research. We look forward to connecting with listeners through their reflection and conversations. If you see public impact scholarship occurring in your community, tag us. Let us know. Stay in touch or share your thoughts by tagging us on Twitter at #GCSWHearLab. Rate our show, leave us a review, and subscribe so you can learn about all things Here Lab and can cultivate change in research procedures, policy, and impact practice. This is your host, Anil Arora, signing off, living the dream.